One of my favorite things to do, it's a little bit nerdy sometimes, but one of my favorite things to do is make lists. There's something just completely satisfying about sitting down and getting everything that fits a particular category onto a piece of paper. It could be the things you need to do today, it could be your favorite movies, it could be whatever it is. For me, there's a lot of satisfaction there. And Austin just led us in a song about maybe the happiest list we can make. Counting our blessings, naming them one by one. So I want to just take a minute here, as we begin the lesson, to lead you in those thoughts. Let you think for yourself, not about my blessings, but about what blessings you're grateful to the Lord for in your life. What are the physical blessings in your life that you're thankful for? As you wander in your mind's eye through your home, and look at your favorite spots in your house, look at the things that bring you joy and happiness, places where memories maybe happened. One of the things that I didn't bring them up here with me, sometimes if I just pull out my keys, I can see a whole ring full of blessings, you know? And in those blessings, there are opportunities, you know? I have the ability to go to my job, work every day. There's a key for that. I have the ability to go into my home and enjoy the safety and the pleasure of that house. I have the ability to start up my car, to come here, to worship and prepare. You might think about the blessings we have in this country. It's a great country. We have concerns about it. But it's. Aren't you grateful that you're an American? We look at the natural world. I don't know if you're a mountain person or a beach person, a waterfall person, somebody that loves gardens, but surely there's something. As you look at that sunset we saw last night, or you look at the beauty all around us, there are things to be grateful for. What about the relationships in your life? The loved ones you have? Who are those people that you're just so thankful to God for? You think about your spouse. Think about your children. Think about your dearest friends, your parents, your grandparents, people maybe who aren't even around anymore, but that you've had the privilege of knowing. And then there are those great spiritual blessings we have. Ephesians 1 goes through this wonderful list telling us that every spiritual blessing is found in Christ. And then it lists redemption, the forgiveness of our sins, being guilt-free through Jesus' blood, having hope beyond this life, being able to pray, having a group of people who share our faith and our love for the Lord that we can encourage one another, being able to be enlightened by the book of God. What about the abilities and opportunities in your life? You know, you have talents that maybe other people have them, but not everybody has them. Those are blessings. The opportunities that come just from having time. You know, having lived however many years you've lived so far, and having however many years you have to come. That's an opportunity and that's a blessing. I was thinking about having a good name. You know, I didn't know how to illustrate that, so I put John Hancock up there. I don't know if that's a good name, but it's a name we all know. You know, that's a blessing. That's a privilege. Even just having change, having money in our pockets is an ability. It's an opportunity we have to do all kinds of things. One of the hardest truths that the Bible tries to get us to understand is to count it all joy, to count it as a blessing when we go through hard times. That even trials can be to us a blessing. And if we think about those experiences we've had, the people we've lost, the things that we've gone through, has that changed us? Has that affected us? Have we grown from those things? In Jesus' parables, he teaches us a sobering truth to go with all this gratitude and all this joy that we see when we think about our blessings. A truth that we need to blend with these things as we think about the good things God has given to us. He says in Luke 12 and verse 48, "To whom much was given, much will be required." All the good stuff we have comes with something. It comes with a responsibility. As Christians, I think we want to be responsible with our blessings. We want to glorify God with all the things He's given to us. But there are some challenges that we face sometimes whenever we try to do this. And I want to address these three challenges in this lesson. The first is, we want to have God be pleased, we want to honor Him, but we also want to do what we want with our stuff sometimes. I mean, it's just natural to want to do our thing with our stuff, whether that's our time or our relationships or whatever it is. A second challenge is, it's easy to compare ourselves to other people's blessings and start to make excuses, start to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable doing that because of how I measure up against this other person. And third, sometimes it's hard to find the urgency to properly prioritize these things, to properly prioritize God's requirements whenever we have all these pressing demands and all these things that we want to do. So we'll talk about those three things, but all of these come together into a concept that the Bible calls stewardship. Stewarding these things that we have. So let's first look at how we can address this challenge of doing what we want to do. And the key here that Jesus teaches us as we look at his parables is to think like a steward, not like an owner. You ever notice you take care of other people's stuff better than your own? Like, you know, I can go months without washing my own car. But if I were to borrow Austin's car for 1 week, I would bring it back spotless. I notice that whenever I go to work, I'm much more efficient with my time while I'm at work than I am with my own free time. Because it's not my time, and I view it differently. Whenever we view something as not our own, it changes the way we are with it. But when we think of this whole world and all the stuff we have as our own, we start to not only take it for granted, but what's worse, we start to think we can do whatever we want with it. You know, we might say, it's my time. You know, that other time, that was their time, and this belongs to that person, and this belongs to work, but this is my time. So I'm going to do what I want to do with it. It's my money. Those are my kids. I'm going to do what I want to do with them. This is my marriage. It's my house. This is all my life. Hear that a lot, especially in the world, but it creeps in. It gets in our minds. God is the owner of all of these things. Psalm 24 and verse 1 says, "The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." And to go to a verse that we saw this morning, this should look familiar. 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19 to 20 makes it a little more personal. It says, it's not just that God is the owner of the universe in general. He's the owner of you specifically. He says, you are not your own. You were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. In fact, I'm twice his. once by creation and once by redemption. We belong to the Lord, and that makes us just stewards of these things here. Stewardship is something I hear about a lot now. It's kind of a buzzword. I hear about it in business sometimes. And we've really emphasized the financial responsibility part of it, and that is a really important part of stewardship. But that's not all of it. Stewardship is a central theme of Christianity. If you think about it, if you look at Genesis 2 and 3, what was the job God gave us when he put us down here on the earth? When he put Adam and Eve down in the garden, what did he say? Here you go. Take care of this. Have dominion over all of these animals, over this garden. Tend to it and take care of it. We've been stewards from the beginning. So what is a steward? A steward is a manager. It's somebody who takes care of another person's stuff. In Jesus' day, the steward was a really important position in the household of most people. They had a steward who was the chief servant, the one who was in charge of all the other servants and everything else in the house. And the master had entrusted the steward with these things. So almost, as we look at this role of stewardship, almost half of Jesus' 30-plus parables deal with stewardship in some way. Let's focus in on the context of our text here in Luke chapter 12. And we read the end of verse 48, but let's go back to verse 42. It says, "And the Lord said, 'Who then is the faithful and sensible steward whom his master will put in charge of his servants to give them their rations at the proper time?'" Again, this is Luke 12 and verse 42. We see a couple things there. One is that stewards are meant to be faithful and sensible. That's the way we'll be judged. That's the way the steward will be evaluated, is how wise they are and how trustworthy or faithful they are. It says, "whom his master will put in charge." So the master owns it. It says, "who will put in charge of his servants." But he has taken those things and put them in the steward's trust. It says in verse 43, "Blessed is that slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that slave says in his heart, 'My master will be a long time coming,' and begins to beat the slaves, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers." And in verse 47, "And that slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with his will receive many lashes." So stewards have a lot of authority. You know, they are the ones who can make all of these decisions. And there's a way in which we do have ownership of our stuff here, right? We have ownership because God has given these things to us to enjoy and to use and to make all the decisions about how our time and our money and our stuff, our relationships, how these things are going to be managed. I think that's why in Acts 5, whenever Ananias and Sapphira bring their money and lay it at the apostles' feet and say, "Here's everything that we have. We sold everything, and here's all of it." And of course they lied. They didn't give all of it. And Peter said to them, "Don't you know, whenever it was yours, you could have made whatever decision you wanted with it. That was yours to decide what to do with." So we do have ownership in that it's ours to make the decisions about. But we will be judged on those decisions. And that's the idea of stewardship. When we get this idea that we're not the owners, that we're stewards, suddenly it's not, "How much money will I, out of the goodness of my heart, give to you?" It's, "Lord, this is all yours anyways. Help me to see how you want me to spend it. Help me to see what I should do with all of this." It makes us one of God's money managers. It makes us one of God's time managers and resource managers. to extend God's kingdom is the goal of all of this. It's not just about growing these resources, it's about growing the master's resources. And the master isn't interested in our portfolio, he's interested in how we take our portfolio and grow his kingdom with it. That's what we'll be judged on. So how we manage these things will be affected by who we think it belongs to. But secondly, we need to work with what we have. Another one of the challenges is that it's so easy to look at each other and to start making excuses. But look over at Luke 16 in verse 10. It says there, "One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much." This is the Lord taking another one of the stewardship parables and teaching us this idea that kind of takes away all of our if-onlys. You know, it's hard to say, if only I had a bigger house, I'd have people over. Or if only I had more Bible knowledge, I'd teach somebody. Or if only I had more time, maybe if I didn't have kids, or if I wasn't in college and going to school and working at the same time, maybe if all of those things, I'd do more. But the Lord says, look at what you have and do the best you can with what that is. We're going to be judged not by what somebody else has, but by what we do with what we have. And it's not just about growing what we have. If that was the case, think about the rich farmer. Do you guys remember the rich farmer that Jesus told about? After he stored up all of his resources into barns, and he said, you know, today I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry because I've spent my whole life saving up for this. And Jesus called him a fool. Well, isn't it wise to live within your means and save up your money and your resources? Absolutely. That's good stewardship. The problem is, he was thinking just about today. He wasn't thinking about the eternal consequences. He wasn't thinking about growing God's kingdom with his stuff. He just wanted to grow his own enjoyment. The other lesson I think we can get from this is that we need to be faithful in the details. You know, God cares a lot about the little things. He talks about how he knows the hairs on our head. He sees when a sparrow falls. Well, he cares about the little things in our decision making. He cares about the little things when we have 5 minutes of time. You know, what we do with $5 is just as important with what we do with $500 to God. That's the lesson that we start to see in this. Finally, we need to live like we'll answer to the master today. It's easier said than done. Delayed accountability is a real challenge. A major theme of all of Jesus' stewardship parables is the master's absence. You know, he always goes away, and the question is, what's the steward going to do while the master's away? It's easy to be faithful when the master, you see him right next to you, looking over your shoulder, and you know the master is just watching what you do. The challenge is when you don't see the master, and you don't know when he's going to come. Where I work, the conference rooms have glass walls. So, and it's an open concept work area. So what that means is when I'm in a meeting, I can pretty much see what everybody's doing, depending on where I'm sitting in the meeting. And we had this one employee, a young web designer, who I would be sitting in my favorite spot in the conference room. And for some reason, I was always able to see exactly what he was doing. It was really distracting because, I mean, every day, the whole meeting, he was playing on YouTube and on Facebook. I mean, these are like hour meetings. And obviously, he's not an employee any longer, but what he didn't realize was that his bosses could see him
when we weren't near. You know, when I walk up to him, he'd quickly flip over and he'd have his work pulled up. And isn't that a lesson for us? To realize our master can see us even when it doesn't seem like he's near. He's coming again soon, and that's when the great accountability will come. But our master doesn't give performance appraisals every year like we get at work. Until that time, we have to evaluate ourselves. We're told to test ourselves to see if we're in the faith. See how we measure up to his standards. So I want to go through those blessings again and ask you to, if you were to rate your stewardship in each of these areas, maybe 1 to 10, just think about how you would rate your stewardship. Are you doing a good job taking care of what the Lord's given to you physically? Are you making wise decisions? Are you paying attention to the details of how you spend your money, how you spend your time, how you use your home, how you use your vehicle, how you use your freedoms? Are you where you want to be? Are you where the Lord wants you to be in these things? How are you doing in stewarding your relationships? You know, these people that God has allowed to be in our lives are a blessing, and they're also a responsibility that we have. Responsibility to lead them in the right way, to be a good example, to try to make a difference in their lives. How about in our spiritual blessings? You know, that's the direct application, it seems, in our text in verse 48. He says that to the person who has this knowledge, there's going to be a greater accountability. What a great blessing that we, through the grace of God, have found the knowledge that's led us to God's saving grace. What are we doing with it? How are we stewarding that blessing? How are we using the opportunity we have, the incredible power we have, to make a difference through prayer? How are we stewarding this book that we have that can change our lives and others? What about our talents? What about our abilities? All the opportunities we have, are we redeeming the time? Are we taking our experiences that have taught us so much and using it? You know, Paul says in 2 Corinthians 1 to comfort those who are in sorrow with the comfort with which you were comforted by God. Are we stewarding that good name and the abilities that we've been given? Reading the New Testament, you get the impression that the early Christians, at least I get the impression, that the early Christians might have been surprised if they heard that the earth was going to keep going, keep spinning for another 2,000 years. And that's not because, you know, the Bible teaches that it was going to happen any time and specifically. It was because they were told to be ready for him to come today. It was because they were told, it's going to come like a thief in the night. They were anxiously waiting, alert, watching. There's a story that I heard, or that I read as I was preparing for this, about two farmers. And they were, one of them was a Christian and one of them was an atheist. And the two were right, had plots of land right next to each other. And the farmer that was an atheist went up to the farmer that was a Christian and said, you know what, let's do a test. Let's see. I'm going to plant my grain and I'm going to curse God and I'm going to do vile things. And you plant yours and you pray and you do the right things and we'll see who has a better yield. And come October, the atheist came over to the Christian and said, look at this. My crops yielded more than your crops. What does that say to you about your God? And the Christian replied, my God doesn't pay up all his accounts in October. Galatians 6, 9. Let's flip over to this, and this will be the last passage we look at. Galatians 6 and verse 9. Alan talked about investing this morning. That kind of fits what I'm trying to get across too. It says, "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary." Just hang in there. Live like he's coming today. And tomorrow, if he didn't come today, we'll just live like he's coming that day. And we'll try to be always prepared. There's a... I was thinking about that song that Austin led as I started working on this lesson. That's what made me... combining that song with that verse in Luke 12 made me want to preach this lesson. There's another song that, for whatever reason, has been stuck in my head all week. And it's a song that Bing Crosby sings whenever he can't sleep in White Christmas, and Rosemary Clooney can't sleep, and they're both awake, and they're eating liverwurst sandwiches or something. And he says, "When you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessings." So I want to challenge you guys. I've kind of been trying to do this week, and hopefully it'll continue beyond just preparing for the sermon. As you're going to sleep tonight, to spend just a little bit of time going through your blessings, thinking about them, thanking God for each one, and with each one, having the prayer that you'll be able to steward them in a way that honors him. If you're not a Christian tonight, the day of the Master's return is coming. You saw the horrible language in verse 46 of our text that Jesus said, that servant who's unfaithful is going to be ripped apart. He's trying to get across to us the seriousness of how horrible hell will be. And then in the next verse, he tries to tell us how good heaven's going to be. It's all about eternity. We want to invite you tonight, if you've studied the Bible and you understand that through faith and repentance and confession of your faith and being baptized, that you can be saved, you can be a Christian, we want to invite you tonight to come while we stand and sing.